When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Bienvenido to another La Liga Lowdown podcast, match day 11, and what a match day it was. It took place over Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, and some fantastic games. I think I counted every single game had bags of narrative this midweek. My name is Rory Barlow, I should probably say that. I am joined by the ever-present and ever-wonderful Matt Clark. How are you doing, Matt?
Ah, thanks, Rory. Yes, very well, thank you. Another fantastic midweek round to follow the weekend. Almost every game now is filled with goals and drama. And yeah, La Liga feels alive. And if you look at the table, there is a lot of league. It's very exciting.
Yeah, certainly. And was there anything that stood out to you this midweek at all?
Well, I mean, I have to go by the day. I mean, Villarreal's comeback against Cadiz was surely the game of the weekend. But then, very last thing, Levante Atleti almost ran it very close because that was a dramatic kind of double comeback from Levante. Controversy with the refereeing decisions and Simeone sent off, and yeah, Levante fighting for every point. We had Granada get another late equaliser to keep them alive and condemn Getafe to another winless match. Betis are flying, Real Sociedad is still on top, and none of the big three in Spain won this week.
Certainly, it is probably the most competitive I think I've seen La Liga, certainly in a long time. And we have coming up in the show, David Whitworth will be on to talk about Betis. We have Robbie Dunn to give us the Rayo Vallecano story, and a big story it was too. There was kind of the only place to start this weekend, wasn't it, Matt?
Absolutely. Yeah, we saw a tweet from Ewan McTeer that despite Ronald Koeman winning more trophies at Barcelona than Real Madrid, during his tenure there, Barcelona have sacked Ronald Koeman, and that, as you say, is the only place we have to start.
And without further ado, we will take a deep dive into that, and I'll throw it over to you, Matt.
Elena Condis.
Y hay comunicado oficial del Barça, 00 y 14 de la noche. El Fútbol Club Barcelona ha destituido esta noche a Ronald Koeman como técnico del primer equipo.
So it's the end of the line for Ronald Koeman. His time at Barça is officially over. And of course, we have to get some reaction to this big news on the podcast. So Rory and I are now joined by Roman Darquer. We've got our two Barcelona correspondents here. Firstly, Rory, Roman, we'll go to you first, Roman. What are your reactions after this sacking?
Well, I think my main reaction is relief, I'd say, because we'd been holding on to Koeman for a long time, despite bad results, as we'd seen even against in Real Madrid in the Clásico. You know, you expected that maybe that would be the final blow for Koeman, but they still gave him one more opportunity, and it didn't work out well, clearly. I mean, we all knew that Koeman should have left way sooner. Things were just not working properly. There was no evolution from last season. Without Messi, it was making it even more evident, you know, that something was missing in Koeman's team, and that he wasn't capable of doing any better. So, I mean, sooner or later, this had to happen, and they waited until now. So, I guess relief and a bit of happiness also, because now we get that extra maybe thing to look forward to in Barcelona, because as you may know, it's all quite depressing at the moment in many aspects. So this might give us a little bit of hope.
New beginnings indeed. The announcement came exactly a year after the resignation of Josep Bartomeu was official. So quite poetic irony there. The man, of course, who appointed Koeman in the first place. Rory, how about you? How did you digest the news?
Yeah, I have to say, I'd be lying if I didn't crack a smile when I found out the news. I'd sort of switched off from social media for an hour, because that was a depressing defeat against Rayo Vallecano. And yeah, from a sort of more analytical point of view, this was very much, we saw it coming. It was been looming over the hill for like a long, long time. And now that it's finally over, I think my initial reaction is that Barcelona can move forward again, which is pretty important given where they are and how they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of our listeners and followers will be wondering, looking at, you know, the way Barca have been financially in desperate straits in the last 12 to 18 months. Here's a question. Roman, can Barca even afford this?
Well, yeah, that's definitely a good question. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they waited so long, you know, to see if they could, if Koeman could somehow miraculously try and fix the situation, and then they would avoid, of course, paying those 12 million euros they're saying that he's going to earn. And at first they said that there might be an agreement between Laporta and Koeman, so they won't have to pay everything. But then other journalists have said that Koeman is going to ask for every single cent. So we'll have to see if finally Koeman, as a club legend, can kind of be understanding towards the club, even though I know he will be unhappy with a lot of people within the club, and he won't want to concede anything. But given the situation, it wouldn't be bad from his side, I guess, to try and be a bit generous in this sense, because he is going to take a lot of money anyway. But it's definitely something that Barca can't really afford. But of course, if things go to worse, if we get kicked out of the Champions League, if in La Liga we finish out of the top four positions, etc., etc., this could be even more impacting, you know, to the finances of Barcelona. So I think this decision had to be made sooner or later, and I think it's going to be worth it if someone comes in and finally can change this dynamic and at least do a bit better. We're not saying win titles immediately or nothing the like, but, you know, start getting the team to play better, to perform, to compete, to start at least winning against sides like Rayo Vallecano, like Elche, like etc., etc., who are like mid-table supposedly, and who Barcelona should be capable of winning easily, you know.
Yeah, is that it then, Rory? Do you think the fact that, okay, it may cost a big amount in payout, but you know, the cost, as Roman hinted at there, the cost of missing out on the top four is an even bigger hit, and therefore this is a kind of 12 billion euro gamble that Laporta had to take.
Yeah, 100%. I think Roman is bang on with his analysis there. And from a more sort of general perspective, if you continue down this road, which Barcelona were on, of just the mental effects that this was having on the players, on the club, on the fans, the way that sponsors will be viewing this club in complete ruin. If you continue along this and there's no positivity, there's no change of direction, then your assets are devalued. All the players, they're going to be worse players for playing in a side that's dysfunctional, and the entire sort of ship will continue to sink at a faster rate. And so if you do try and turn it around, you may get some benefit in terms of cost down the line. You may be able to sell a Coutinho for 20 million instead of trying to pay him off and give him away for free like they did with Luis Suarez.
Well, of course, yeah, some interesting, yeah, some quite surprising and frankly baffling decisions have been made over the last kind of 12, 18 months, as we've touched on. In terms of Koeman's tenure as a whole then, we must be fair and say that there were some bright sparks. Of course, the Copa del Rey win was the highlight. And in 2021, still, Barca are among the top teams to have taken most points of any side. So it just shows how much they have fallen this current season. Because at the back end of last season, they were arguably the best team in Spain. And it was only that late slip-off which kind of, you know, sowed the seeds of doubt in many people's minds. So I'll ask you both now. Firstly, Roman, Where did it kind of go wrong for you? Because you were quite optimistic with Koeman's appointment, and you know, as a club legend, you had a lot of respect and admiration for him. So, where did it start to kind of change your mind? Where did it go wrong?
Well, definitely this season, at least for me, because it's true that at the end of last season, it did go wrong in the sense that we lost La Liga. We were quite close. They were fighting right until the end. And I think I personally didn't expect Barca to be fighting right until the end for that league after that 8-2 thrashing against Bayern, after all the trouble with Bartomeu, etc. So honestly, I gave certain credit to Koeman in this sense, because he managed to make the team compete basically until the end. And also in terms of the football they were playing, I thought there were some really good games where Barca, you know, were combinating really well, were very offensive, you know, generating lots of opportunities, something we were sometimes missing with Setién or Valverde. So I thought that maybe, you know, a second year would allow him to keep evolving in this aspect and improving. And it's true that he kept playing youngsters, which is always a great positive. But at the same time, you just saw that the football wasn't really improving at all this year. Of course, a lot of that has to do with Leo Messi, how important he was for this team. People would say, whenever Messi leaves, it's going to be dramatic. And it really has been dramatic, because Leo Messi is just incomparable, and nobody can really play in his position or do what Messi used to do for Barcelona. So in that sense, some of the blame has to be taken away from Koeman, because of course he isn't the guy who's causing every single problem in the club. Even without Koeman, there's still going to be a lot of things to improve on and to solve. But I think that without him, seeing that there really wasn't that evolution I was talking about, seeing how against the big teams we're still suffering so much. Last season it was the same. Against the big teams, we weren't getting good results. This season, once again, against Bayern Munich, against Madrid, Atletico, etc., Barca just were incapable of competing at the highest level. So I think that really showed to all of us that Koeman wasn't just not good enough a manager for Barcelona. And I was proved wrong in this sense, because I thought that maybe he would be capable of continuing with this, but in the end it wasn't the case. So I mean, the best thing I think in this situation is just to find somebody else.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned the young players there, because a number of them have posted some very positive and respectful mm-hmm. Instagram posts, the likes of Pedri and Oscar Mingueza, Ansu Fati, Nico. They've all made their debuts under Ronald Koeman, and of course they'll always remember those moments. Rory, how about you? You've been a bit more critical for longer, I think it's fair to say. Where did it go wrong for you?
I think, to be honest, where maybe the nail in the coffin was sealed for me was in that 2 weeks of Laporta doubting him and asking him for more time to sort of find a different manager. That's where I think this really went downhill. But I mean, Koeman's situation, it is very hard to judge him, naturally, because it would have been really, really difficult for any manager to succeed under this kind of pressure. And I think it's important to list some of the things that Koeman has undergone. So we had the Messi Boro fax, we had Luis Suarez leave, which was a drama in itself, and maybe he could have done better. Bartomeu resigned. He was obviously coming off the back of a historic 8-2 defeat in which Quique Setién lost his job. He went 6 months nearly with no president in charge, no backing, no figure to sort of give him power against the squad. And then Laporta again gave him that sort of 2 weeks of uncertainty where he kind of proved that he didn't believe in him. Messi leaves, and this is a club that, in general, without all those things, needs rebuilding, and a club that's in financial chaos. So without all of those things that I've just listed, are still in crisis. And to work under those conditions is incredibly difficult. I think, for me, what sort of blanked out the good things that he did and what caused him to lose his job, ultimately, is that there was no clear direction of travel since that kind of Granada defeat where the league campaign went wrong. There was gaping holes within the side where you saw that more modest teams with less resources were able to do far more and were able to look far more organised. And that is really where Koeman has lost his job, because he, initially as well, I think last season his discourse was really good in the media and he was able to install a bit of confidence in the club. But this season, we've seen a total turnaround of that, and we've seen him say, well, we can't compete, we can't do anything against this, which has been proven by other teams and other players to just be not true. And I think that has really sealed his fate somewhat.
Yeah, even after the game against Rayo, Sergio Busquets came out and faced the cameras and said that a little bit of the belief had gone. And I think that's perhaps quite telling. So that's the end of Ronald Koeman, and now we look to the future. And of course, the name on everybody's lips is Xavi, currently coach of Al Sadd in Qatar. He's been heavily linked in the media. It's been, you know, almost a done deal, but of course it might not happen. So we should stress that. Roman, first of all, if it is Xavi, how happy would you be with that? And if it isn't, for whatever reason, who would your other preferred candidates be?
Well, to be honest, I've always been a bit skeptical about Xavi in the past because for many years people have been given for granted that he's going to be the new Pep Guardiola. And of course, that's very dangerous because it's true that he doesn't have too much experience in European football, and we don't really know if he can really replicate all he's doing in Qatar here in a much more competitive league such as the Spanish one. But at the same time, I really just can't think of any better candidate at this moment, given how the club is really struggling and how it needs somebody who actually can properly implement the ideas Barca believe in. We could say, I think Xavi in that sense is the best and only candidate at the moment I could trust to lead this club and to improve things. And he's got, you know, that authority. He knows some of the players. He knows the club inside out. He knows how La Masia works. He knows how the fans here react. He knows everything basically about Barcelona. So I think that's a key factor in which another manager like maybe Conte, like maybe Pirlo, etc., could not provide, because they'd come with a lot of questions, you know, for themselves about Barcelona. So I mean, I think at the moment, he is the ideal man, even though I know there's going to be a risk, you know, because I mean, Xavi could perfectly fail and he could be a deceiving manager. But at the same time, I'd be willing to take the risk at this moment. And if he doesn't come, honestly, I'm not really sure who I'd bring, because we can't really take away managers which are already in other clubs, such as Pep in City or Ten Hag or Tuchel, etc., because they're all other clubs and we can't afford to bring in them at the moment. So free manager out there, I don't know, I just can't really say, because I'd just maybe say Conte or some random guy, but I don't really know, he'd do much better than Xavi anyway. So for me, it's Xavi or nothing at this stage.
Ernesto Valverde's available, but we'll move on.
No thank you.
Rory, do you agree with that take there from Roman? Do you agree?
Yeah, more or less. And I think there's been quite a narrative, and I think even perhaps Juan Laporta subscribed to this, that Barca should try and wait till the summer and get someone that they really want in, that they really trust in. And that is definitely a danger, because we've seen what happens when Laporta doesn't believe in a manager. But on the other hand, if you do wait, I mean, you're throwing away a season in October and getting a placeholder in, which is pretty dangerous, especially when we know that Barcelona need to make the Champions League. And how long can Barcelona really afford to just kind of, yeah, tread water? This club needs to start moving forward now, and it needs someone who, at least in their mind, can sort of bring a long-term project to them. And I think the longer you go without it, the more you risk things kind of falling apart further. Erik ten Hag, as Roman mentioned, would probably be my favourite appointment, but that's impossible. Other options like Marcelo Gallardo, like, very difficult to do in mid-season. And so if you look at the free managers, maybe you could give it to someone who's dealt with kind of La Masia and some of the Base and some of that kind of football in Barcelona. But in terms of options of someone who can come in, and Xavi will have more credit than the likes of Gallardo or Ten Hag, because if it goes wrong for them, they'll be far more under pressure, even if they come in the summer. Whereas
for sure,
Xavi comes in, I think he has the rest of the season's grace as long as the team shows some improvement. And the fans will give him every opportunity to succeed, in my mind.
Well, for the immediate reality, Barcelona have announced that Sergi Barjuan will be the interim coach. He was the B team manager this season, replacing Garcia Pimienta. And he was a former player. He made his Barcelona debut alongside Ronald Koeman, and he played his last game for Barca alongside Xavi. So perhaps he is the ideal bridge between the two eras. Roman, Sergi Barjuan, what's your opinion on him?
Well, to be honest, it doesn't excite me very much as an interim manager, because first of all, he took García Pimienta's position in a way which wasn't ideal, in the sense that it seemed more like Laporta was doing a friend a favor, you know, taking out García Pimienta and just putting Sergi Barjuan in there. And it hasn't been great, to be honest, with the B team. They're struggling, they're mid-table. They haven't won too many games, they've drawn lots of games. And it's true that, of course, Gabi, Nico and Balde are important players for the B team, and they're spending more most of the time with the first team, and of course that complicates things. But I don't know, the way that the B team has been playing and how they've been doing things, I'm not really attracted to the idea of having Sergi Bajuan. But of course, if it's for one or two games, we can deal with it and move on as soon as possible.
Mm. Rory, so it's Alaves at the weekend, and then potentially this he also might be in charge for the must-win game against Dynamo Kiev in the Champions League. It's a big risk, isn't it? Because if Barca don't win that, they could be out of the competition. So it's the big task for Sergi Bajuan, even if it's just one or two games, no?
Yeah, it's a massive game against Dynamo Kiev, and we'll see what happens there. I have to say, I don't know huge amounts about Sergi Bajuan apart from what I've seen for the B team this season. If you look at his previous track record, there's very little to suggest that he is likely to be too successful. But I think the immediate relief of just sort of breaking with Koeman and having kind of a fresh start will definitely help the players to sort of let loose a little. And yeah, I as I say, I'm not the most knowledgeable on Sergi Bajuan, but I will leave you with a tweet that I saw, which was quite funny, that said, I think this was right after Koeman had been sacked, and it's just like, I really don't hope, this wasn't mine, but I really hope that Barcelona don't appoint Sergi Bajuan, a man who can't even eat a two-scoop ice cream without getting it all over himself. So that kind of shows you kind of the esteem that he is held in some quarters. But yeah, we'll see what happens. I think the immediate release will be enough for Barcelona, hopefully, to get two results at the weekend.
Yes, well...
I just wanted to add one thing, Matt, and it's that apparently when the negotiations with Xavi, they decided that Barca want him to come immediately, as soon as possible, to play at least after the Alaves game, obviously to be there for the Champions League game. But apparently Malsad has two games still until the 3rd of November, and the 3rd of November there's a really important game for Al-Sadd against the second team in the Qatar League, and of course they want Xavi to stay until that game because that would be a crucial one. If they win, they'll have a 6-point margin at least, and also there's going to be a massive break in the Qatar League until the end of December after that, so it would seem unlikely that Xavi could arrive before the 3rd of November.
It could even be after the international break potentially by the time they've got the agreement sorted with the Qatar club. Well, thank you very much for you both, for your contributions and valuable insights there. It's a new era at Barcelona, and we'll just see where it goes from here. It could scarcely be more dramatic than the most recent ones have. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Many thanks again to Roman for his fabulous insights there. We're going to take a quick break now, and then we will jump into the rest of the action, starting with Robbie Dunn and the flip side of that Rayo Barcelona result.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It's the Matchday 11 recap. We are going to jump straight into the other side of that inglorious defeat to a glorious win for Rayo Vallecano with Robbie Dunn and Matt Clark.
Well, I'm joined by Robbie Dunn, author of Working Class Heroes, the story of Rayo Vallecano, the neighbourhood club that is now back in La Liga. And they are flying. They have won all five of their first matches at home in La Liga this season. And this one is perhaps the biggest of them all. Robbie, thank you very much for coming on the pod. What a night.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, when you asked me to come on the pod a couple of days ago, I was thinking, oh, it's going to could have gotten the result, but no, in the end, coming on here talking about what was a historic night in Vallecas, and one that, given the disparity in how much money both clubs have, I think Rayo deserved that win tonight.
Absolutely. Another goal for Falcao. He's got more goals than starts in La Liga this season, and it's Rayo's first win over Barca in 19 years. And the last 14 matches between the sides have all been victories for Barca. So that just kind of puts into context how big an achievement this is. But at the start of the season, you contributed to Rory's article on Andoni Iraola. Just how fantastic do you think he is? And you know, what's your take on how he's been able to transform this Rayo side?
I think sometimes it's hard to kind of, we don't really know yet, or we don't have a good kind of measure yet on a metric or whatever you want to call it on just how, what kind of an effect a manager can have on a team, a good coach can have, and a good coach rather than a good manager. And I think we see it with like the likes of Julen Lopetegui, who turned Sevilla into a team that's really hard to play against. Every game he plans it out perfectly and stuff like that. And I think Andoni Iraola is slowly making a name for himself as one of the best coaches in La Liga, given the quality of his squad. And it has been evident since his time at Mirandés when they went on the Copa del Rey run, and I'm probably repeating myself now, but I said the same to Rory. I think that he showed the same in the playoffs against in the Segunda last season when Rayo obliterated Leganés and Girona. And then he, after just sneaking into the playoffs, by the way. And then this year, I mean, Rayo, aside from the hammering they took to Sevilla in the first round when Zidane was sent off after 8 minutes, yeah. Rayo are top of the league. And I understand that, look, that's, as they say in Spain here, that's anecdotal, that's just kind of things are leaving themselves out, and they probably will to an extent. But Andoni Iraola is slowly making a name for himself as one of the very best coaches in La Liga. And I think we've seen that. We saw that tonight with his in-game management, with his with how well Rayo managed to, even when they went 1-0 up and they in kind of uncharted territory and weren't really sure how to kind of act. Do we keep pushing forward? Do we try and get a second? Do we just sit back? What do we do? And I think they coped well. There was a couple of nervy moments, obviously, but I thought they were good value for that win tonight. And they looked as comfortable as you'd expect, or more comfortable than you'd expect, given the quality of the opposition.
Definitely. And of course, Memphis had a second half penalty saved by Stole Dmitrievski. But apart from that, there wasn't much in the way of Barca chances. And if anything, Rayo looked more likely to get a second goal. And that's been a key feature for them, hasn't it? Their front foot play and how they're not scared of being in La Liga. They are taking on everyone they play against. And they're a joy to watch, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's actually important, like, because they do tend, they're able to sit back and soak up pressure, and they look kind of comfortable doing it. I mean, even when Barcelona looked good in the first half, tonight, Rayo never really panicked. It wasn't like, you know yourself as a fan of football, when you're watching your team or you're watching a game, you just know this isn't, they've lost control of this, rather than, like Rayo were always in control of that. And the penalty, obviously, a bit sloppy from Valentin. He that's the kind of one where he probably needs to back up and show the ref. I'm not trying to clip him. But aside from that, yeah, there was nothing. And I think back to your point about Rayo not being afraid to push forward. I think when you have that threat in attack, when you are dangerous, when you are when you can score like the way Rayo did tonight. I think teams that kind of affects the way teams attack against you then. So Rayo never stop attacking. It's not like just kind of sit back and soak up pressure for an hour. There's always that threat on the break with either Alvaro Garcia or Fran or whoever it is on the wings, and or Izzy Palazón. So I think that they are, and for that reason they're really hard to play against.
Yeah, so many standout individuals in this Rayo team. You mentioned a few there. We've also got Gomez Sanya, Oscar Trejo. So many impressive performers in these early weeks. It is early days, and of course, most of the wins have come at home. Apart from that, obviously, famous win at San Mamés, which was very special to Iraola, of course. How far do you think Rayo can go this season, realistically, and also with a kind of head versus heart? How far do you think they'll go?
Head versus heart. I mean, obviously, I'd love to see them maybe pushing for Europe, but realistically, no. Like, it's not going to happen. And I just want Rayo to be able to stay in the Primera, so that they can build again in the summer. Because just going up and going down, it's just you can't even fall in love with players, because you're kind of lose the best ones, and then you have to get new guys in, and then they're all of a sudden not really good enough for when you go back up, and it's kind of you're losing players constantly. So if Rayo could just stay in the Primera this season, and realistically, like, I mean, we don't know what they're going to do in the winter transfer market. Maybe if they brought in one or two players that had a bit of quality, they might make a push for the top half of the table. But realistically, some of those games are just kind of going to go against them. And heart, we're going to push for Europe, make the Champions League. But my head says, stay in the Primera and don't be getting too far ahead of yourself.
Well, why not dream, eh? Why not dream? What a night at Vallecas. Thank you very much for joining us today, Robbie. And we wish you all the best, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, no problem at all, Matt. Vamos, Rayo.
Thanks again to Robbie. Always an excellent listen, not just on Rayo, but on the whole. Now on to another excellent expert, and it's to do with Betis and their 4-1 win over Valencia. Without further ado, we shall hand over to Matt and David. But first, let's hear about Borja Iglesias and his goal.
Gol del Betis! Gol de Juanmi! Gol, 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 gol! Gol del Betis, Juanmi, es simplemente un balón en largo que se come la defensa del Valencia, se lo come Diakabi, se queda en el mano a mano Juanmi, que bate al guardameta Silesen y hace el cuarto para el Betis, que está absolutamente desatado en esta...
I'm delighted to be joined by David Whitworth, presenter for RTV Betis and contributor to other outlets including News Betico and La Liga TV. David, thanks for coming on the pod. A resounding win for Betis against Valencia. Sum up that performance for us.
The 4-1 scoreline was a fair reflection of the game. Betis were by far the better team on the night and proved once again that we've got a very capable team. This is the team's best start to a season ever, with 21 points from the first 11 games. when you hear the chants from the stadium of Hola Gol Norte, Hola Gol Sur, you know that it's party time. It's been many a year that I've heard that particular chant. I think we're in for a great season.
Exciting time for Betis fans indeed. What was your main takeaway from the match against Valencia?
Well, the main takeaway from tonight's game is that the whole squad are performing at an optimum level. You can see that the whole squad are performing with the hunger and commitment. Any 11 that Manuel Pellegrini is putting at the moment are playing at their true potential, at their top potential. And I think the main takeaway I can get from what is happening this season is that the manager is getting the most out of the players that in the past were playing maybe just an average level. Let's say the likes of Juanmi, Alex Moreno, William Carvalho, players that were in and out of the Betis team the last few seasons are now absolutely fundamental for the team. Juanmi is performing probably the best of his career, chasing down defenders, scoring goals. Alex Moreno, he's improved tremendously as a defender. We all knew he was a great attacking defender, but he's improved his defensive shape and organisation as well. And William Carvalho, again, one of the standout performers of the team, his dribbling ability. Everyone knows that he's got a great range of passes, but you can see he's much more implicated in the team. And Manuel Pellegrini is bringing out the very best of this squad.
Two more goals for Borja Iglesias. That's now 17 in 2021, after he had a bit of a drought in 2020. David, can you pin down how his form has been so impressively transformed this calendar year?
There's a lot of contributing factors to the true potential we're seeing of Borja now. Everyone knows that he was a very good striker when he was at Zaragoza, and then with Espanyol, he came to Betis, and I think the price tag and the pressure ultimately told on him. And he's been the first to admit that he felt the pressure of it. And the work that he's done himself, the psychologists, the coaches, the management staff, and the players have all rallied around him and given him the time and the encouragement to recuperate his best form. But it starts with him himself. He is a larger than life character. He is a very positive person, and a lot of credit has to go to the player to have turned round his barren run of form. Even when he wasn't scoring the goals, it was undeniable, his work rate and his commitment to the team. And as time goes on, as a striker, you live off goals. Even the great Alan Shearer went through a great barren run of form, a long barren run of form, I should say, for England many years ago. So it happens to the best of the strikers, but it's very much credit to Borja Iglesias himself for applying himself, getting himself through this barren run of form, and now he's enjoying the fruit of his loom.
Betis are on a fantastic run of results, and their performances have been very impressive too. How has Manuel Pellegrini been able to make this side so resolute and hard to beat?
It's a terrific run of form that Betis are having this calendar year. Just the 4 defeats in 40 matches. And even of those defeats, I would say only the Villarreal 2-0 defeat just before the international break was a worthy scoreline, or a worthy reflection of the match. The other matches, you could argue that Betis deserved more from those defeats. So it's been a terrific run of form this season, and all the credit firstly goes to Manuel Pellegrini and his backroom staff. His knowledge, expertise, his know-how, his leadership, his organisation, his calmness in the hothouse that is the Betis Stadium at times has really galvanised the team and the fans. The fans are singing his name, and he's a winner. He's a proven winner. Wherever he goes, he wins matches. He had a great spell at Villarreal, at Malaga, even that wonderful season at Real Madrid, won the league title with Manchester City. He's turned around Betis' fortunes a lot, and you can hear the ambition in his voice as well. after the Rayo Vallecano game, there was a journalist that asked him, well, Betis are in fourth place at the moment, Champions League spot, you must be delighted. And he said, well, I'm very, very happy, but I can see that we're only 2 points off the top spot. And when he said that, it clicked for me just how ambitious the guy is. No, he's not just content with the fourth position. He's looking above. He's looking for the top spot. We can all dream. Just to add on, the defence of Betis have improved dramatically in the last 2 years. Betis were a very porous team, leaking goals for fun. And since Manuel Pellegrini's come in, he's improved the fortunes of the likes of Mark Bartra. Edgar's having a wonderful season. He started as the number four defender. Now he's probably the number one choice when he plays. And the experience of Bethella and Victor Ruiz. But also a special mention for Claudio Bravo. He is the leader, the manager on the field, let's say. His saves, his leadership, his organisation, his consistency at the age that he is. He's having a terrific season. He's been a terrific signing for Real Betis. One of the best signings, I would say, in recent history.
My thanks to David and, of course, Matt there. That was really good to listen to. And so we're just going to go through the results for the rest of the games and sort of touch on them in a quick hit style, because so much happened to cram into this pod. We'll start at the start with Alaves Elche. Matt?
Yeah, another win for Alaves, and they seem to have turned a corner. Okay, they've both been winnable games, but back-to-back clean sheets, and you know, they seem to just have found a bit of momentum, pulling away from the bottom. And yeah, with Javi Calleja, they have got a quality coach. He did really well at Villarreal, and I think they've given him patience and confidence. And okay, they had a poor start, but I think they could be all right. I stress the word could, because pound for pound, they haven't got the best squad, but they're making the right steps. And we said on the MVP section of last pod that it's Hossolu or nothing apart from set pieces. And of course, this week, it was a set piece, with Loom scoring his first goal for the club. So, yeah, good day for Alaves and a few concerns for Elche.
Another good day was for Diego Lopez for Espanyol. They drew one each at home with Athletic. Both Iñaki and Nico started. Your thoughts on this one, Matt?
Yeah, fabulous performance from Diego Lopez in the Espanyol goal. He's about to turn 40 in a couple of weeks, I believe, and he's playing like he did in his prime, to be honest. He kept out Athletic, especially that save later on from Alex Berenguer. Tremendous stop. And yeah, Athletic, I thought it was quite a nice touch that Iñaki scored on his return to the RCD stadium, where, of course, the last time he was there, he was subject to that racist abuse. So great to see him coming back and scoring, doing what he does best. And yeah, I think it's a pretty fair point. Athletic probably frustrated not to win. But of course, RDT scored again, got himself sent off. He'll miss the game with Getafe, but some would say that's not a bad game to miss from Espanyol's perspective. Yeah, so Athletic warming up for the derby with a point away from home.
Certainly, and it might just hurt Matt's constant shouts for RDT in the Spain squad, if you follow him on Twitter. Villarreal, Cadiz, 3 each, probably the game of the weekend, wasn't it? Or the midweek even, sorry.
Yeah, the days are just into a real blur at the moment. I have to feel for Cadiz. This was back at peak Cadiz. This season, they've been really kind of down on themselves. They've not been playing the same way that they have been. In some games, they've even had more possession of the ball and they still haven't won. So, you know, it's not going right when Cadiz have more of the ball. But in this game, it was just like their counter-attacking best from last season. You remember those famous wins against Real Madrid? Well, this was set up to be very similar. Choco Lozano had the game of his life, 3 fantastic goals, all on the counter, and he could have had a fourth as well. A good save from Sergio Asenjo kept Villarreal in it. And then a late salvo. Villarreal, to be fair to them, they had controlled large spells of the game, as they tend to do. And yet again, it was the same old story. They couldn't really make enough of the moments. But then in the last 10, they just found the cutting edge, and substitutes made the difference. Boulaydia on as a sub to score his first goal. turn one in at the near post. And then Cadiz, they have a chance. I think it's, what is this, 95, 96, something like that. so many late goals, it's hard to remember exactly when. But Cadiz are on the break. Salvi Sanchez does really well on the right-hand side. They can't quite get the finish. And then Villarreal goes straight up the other end. Really good flick on. And then Danjuma keeps his composure and he just slots it home. And yeah, you could see Cadiz, especially Pacho Espino. He'd run his lungs off all night and he just fell to the floor. And you have to feel for Cadiz. But at the same time, Villarreal showing their fighting spirit. And I think it's safe to say they're in probably the most false position of any club in La Liga, because they have a much better squad than their points tally will show. It's just they haven't been able to get the 3 points. So they avoided three defeats in a row. And now they'll be looking to beat Valencia this weekend.
But at what cost, yes. And as conductor of the Pacha propaganda train, my heart was a little heavy upon seeing him on the deck after that late, late equaliser. There was nearly a late winner as Mallorca drew 1-1 with Sevilla. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, again, Mallorca taking the lead and then not being able to close the game out. Of course, Sevilla are a very good side. Fantastic equalising goal from Eric Lamela. And then they thought they'd won it. Lucas Ocampos, last minute, but it was ruled out. Julian Lopetegui after the game said he wasn't quite sure why, because he thought that VAR had been brought in to, you know, clear and obvious errors. And in his view, that wasn't a clear and obvious error. But the goal was disallowed and Sevilla will have to be content with just a point.
Certainly clear and obvious is quite a subjective thing for VAR to intervene on as well. Betis beat Valencia 4-1, as we touched on with David, and Rayo, of course, beat Barca 1-0 in Vallecas. Later on Wednesday night, Real Madrid drew 0-0 at home with Osasuna.
Yeah, again, a really kind of backs-to-the-wall job from Osasuna, but at no stage did you really feel that they were kind of on the edge. They kind of managed Real Madrid, if that makes sense. They kept them at arm's length, and the changes Ancelotti made didn't quite have the desired effect. And another tweet from Ewan McTeer, he noted that, of course, Real Madrid have won the last four Clásicos, but in the subsequent matches after those games, they've dropped points on all four occasions. So a bit of a Clásico hangover there for Los Blancos. As for Osasuna, they're still unbeaten on the road. And how impressive is that, really, when you think about it? They were known for being a home team. El Sadar was the fortress. But to be unbeaten away from home, you know, nearly into November, is a real tremendous achievement from Diego Arrasate.
Heroics from Osasuna, definitely. And another heroic team at the moment. Our league leaders opened up a three-point gap at the top of the table. Real Sociedad went to Vigo and beat Celta 2-0, Matt.
In the pouring rain, Real Sociedad had a performance which looks like the mark of champions, dare I say. Tough conditions, Celta on the back of a good 3-0 win on Monday night to boost their confidence. And yeah, it was a tight game, make no mistake. At 1-0, Celta had a couple of chances, a couple of goals disallowed. But that second goal really was the decisive one from, at least I don't know much about it, but it was enough. And of course, Matty Ryan in goal. I was surprised that Imanol had made the change in goal. I'm thinking, why is he doing that? Ramiro has been fantastic this season. But then Matty Ryan made me eat my words very quickly with a sensational performance. As we'll touch on, an MVP. He was, alive and equal to everything Celta could throw at him. So yeah, La Real march on and they are top of the table.
Indeed they are, and towards the bottom of the table, Granada, Getafe, Kike Sanchez Flores was so close to his first win as Getafe boss, but the La Ley del Ex Jorge Molina stopped that, didn't he? 1-1.
Yeah, this, again, Getafe, you wonder where their first win's going to come from now, because Granada away on paper is a winnable game for them, the form Granada are in. Robert Moreno isn't enjoying the best of starts, the fans are kind of already on the turn with him. And yeah, Getafe get that opening goal. They're holding on. Granada are pushing. Yes, they have a penalty. And if you haven't seen this penalty miss, please check it out. Okay, the pitch was a bit scuffed, which is what Luis Suarez will use as an excuse. But my word, I think that ball is still rising. So if you're anywhere near Granada, watch the skies above you, because you might have a football drop on you. But then, yeah, literally last few seconds of the game, it's the final play of the match, 97th minute. Corner comes in. Jorge Molina couldn't believe his luck. He's basically free at the near post. He just heads it home. He becomes the fifth oldest goalscorer in La Liga history as well in that moment. And of course, he asked for forgiveness from the fans because as a former Getafe player, this one really hurts for the Getafe fans, I'm sure. And it's looking pretty desperate for Getafe.
And last but certainly not least are Levante. Our reigning champions really have a bogey team in Levante, don't they? Two each, another late goal, two penalties from Enes Bardi. What happened?
Well, Enes the menace for Atleti.
How long have you been sitting on that?
Well, I saw it on the La Liga Twitter, to be fair, so it's not mine. I can't claim the credit or the discredit, as you might think. Atleti, again, a pretty stodgy performance from them. They got ahead early. Antoine Griezmann with his first league goal since returning. Obviously, he scored a few in the Champions League, but this was his first one back in La Liga. Really well-worked corner, actually. He was alive to the reaction, and then he put the ball across and then got on the end of the knockdown. So he was lively to start with. João Felix looked promising again, but that was kind of it. It didn't really click beyond that. The changes Simeone made took a long while to take effect. In the end, they did combine. Rodrigo de Paul driving through the midfield where Malta had just been taken off. I think Terry Gibson was on commentary on La Liga TV and he noted that as soon as Malta was taken out, that was where the hole appeared, and Rodrigo de Paul was intelligent enough to just drive through that and pick the perfect pass. Nice finish from Cunha, his first goal for the club. And you think that's Atleti for another kind of stodgy 2-1 win, but they pick up the points. But oh no, Levante, they never say die, especially against the big sides. They kept pushing. You can't say that it was coming because no one really saw the penalty until it was reviewed. Point blank range, it's been a bit of a divisive talking point in the group chat, hasn't it? A few are saying never a penalty, a few are saying, well, letter of the law, his arm is out of position. But yeah, having looked at it again, it's point blank. I'm not sure what he can really do. His arm, okay, I don't know why his arm is up there in the first place, but he's got no time to react. So I think it's a bit harsh. And when you have players sent off for the dissent from both sides, you kind of know who the pantomime villain is there, don't you, with the referee. But Levante, a strong performance at home. The fans were behind them all the way. So you'd like to think they can kind of kick on from here. And Atleti, under Simeone, only one win in that stadium. They did have a win at La Nucia, but that was, of course, when Ciudad de Valencia was being renovated. So just the one win for Simeone's side at Levante's home ground. So, yeah, real bogey ground. And they now have Betis at the weekend, which is looking like a really tough fixture for Atleti.
Certainly. And I think this is maybe the weakest we've ever seen an Atleti defence under Simeone. It is pretty surprising to see just how easily they're conceding goals. But moving swiftly on, because this is a bumper episode and we have delved into depth on a lot of different topics. MVP, Matt, who are you going with first of all?
Well, my first one is going to be Borja Iglesias. We've heard David eulogise about his turnaround in performance this calendar year. And he's on a real hot streak at the moment. He's scoring in Europe, he's scoring in La Liga. And he's becoming that real focal point, number nine, that Betis needed. That's why they paid so much money for him. As David said, he was brilliant at Espanyol. Pellegrini's really found the formula to get the best out of this team. And Borja is back amongst the goals. He's looking very, very impressive.
Speaking of amongst the goals, I'm going with Choco Lozano. What a performance against Villarreal. He was just lightning. And I think it's the third goal he scores where he's sort of on the right-hand side and gives the ball off and then just breezes past, I think it's Raul Albiol, and then just slots home. And he was, I mean, Villarreal couldn't deal with him. This defence that Emery has worked pretty hard on, and granted it's not been so good this season, just couldn't deal with his runs in behind. And I think Choco Lozano really is becoming a key for Cadiz this season. If you look at the games where he's been involved and heavily, it's him that's the threat. And without him, you really lose so much of what Cadiz can do because they don't really have another sort of flying forward or winger to get in behind. And yeah, his finishing was cool. It was calm. It was collected. It was everything you want from your striker. And you got a feel for him that he scored a hat-trick, first hat-trick in Spanish football, I believe, and still didn't get the win. But anyway, on to your second choice, Matt.
I'm going to have to go with Matty Ryan. A player that I wasn't personally sure would get many games with the form of Ramiro, but he's come in cold. He's only played one game before today, this week, and he came in and looked like he'd been between the sticks all season, to be honest. Not one, but two double saves on different occasions to keep Celta out. Yeah, just a fantastic performance from him, and keeping a clean sheet away in the rain, always tough conditions for goalkeepers, of course, when they're not used to it especially. Perhaps the Premier League experience has done him well there. But yeah, a clean sheet and top of the table. Can't really argue with that, can you?
You cannot. Although I am going to. with David Garcia, we gave an award to the Osasuna goalkeeper Sergio Herrera for their defensive efforts against Villarreal not too many pods ago. And David Garcia is back for the Osasuna defence. He was the best for me out of them alongside partner Unai. And yeah, I think I saw a stat. This was still with about 10, 15 minutes to go, where between the Garcia central defensive partnership, it cleared or recovered about 20 balls between them, which is quite something. It's pretty incredible.
Sensational.
And yeah, Osasuna just, I mean, they haven't been defensively amazing this season, but this game against Real Madrid, they really put their bodies on the line and gave absolutely everything to keep them out. Real Madrid didn't play badly for me. I think Osasuna just put in a really solid, organised defensive performance, and David Garcia was the heart of that for me. But we must wrap up our MVPs there, get onto the Twitter after the pod is out, and you shall see our MVP on Friday, I believe it is. No, just mixing up the days again.
yes,
you
Friday.
Shall see our Friday. Very good. I'm glad you're here to keep me right, Matt. So yes, get on to the Twitter and vote for your favourite out of those four candidates, and we shall see who comes out on top, although my money is on Joko. Moving on to our momentazos of the week, I am going to steal Matt's term and go for the Lamelazo. What a strike. And you said, talking about going and finding highlights of the Luis Suarez penalty, go and find Lamela's strike on YouTube. It's on the La Liga channel. It is some goal, just
howitzer.
So, it's really aesthetic, and so that's what I'm going for, just purely on sort of stylistic and artistic basis. What about yourself, Matt?
Well, it has been a dramatic week, and as we say, it came to a fantastic crescendo with Levante Atleti, but for me, the moment was back on Tuesday night, the six-goal thriller at La Ceramica. Cadiz so valiantly holding on, but they couldn't keep the yellow submarine out forever, and Arnaud Danjuma, who's been the revelation player of the season, the signing of the season for, I would say, most people, maybe aside from Haas, who still thinks it's David Alaba. But yeah, Danjuma's equalising goal for Villarreal, a goal which is only worth 1 point, but it must have felt like three. So yeah, Danjuma for me.
Certainly, and the way he just shrugs off the defender, I think it's a capo. Yeah, absolutely. Acapo looks like he's going to get the ball, and Danjuma just kind of barges him off. It was a real sort of I'm the boss here kind of thing from Danjuma.
Strength, composure, the finish, everything.
It was a hell of a goal and a wonderful moment, especially if you're of the Villarreal Yellow Submarine contingent. And that is our moment of the week, I think. We're going to play out on that. All that remains is for me to thank you, the listener. Thank Matt Clark for his wonderful insight as always.
Thank you, Rory.
And yeah, get on the Twitter, get on Spotify, Facebook, whatever. Share, retweet, like, whatever you want to do to bring our podcast to the masses is always much appreciated. But yes. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for listening. And we will leave you with the fabulous Danju Magic, the Dutchman.
A ver, perdona, balón dentro del área. Danjuma puede proteger el disparo de Danjuma. ¡Gol del Villarreal! Uy. El pase largo de Parejo. Protege con el cuerpo Danjuma. ¡Qué bueno! El zurdo, el neerlandés. Se pone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.